Welcome to the Secret Nerd Podcast, where we think everyone should play tabletop RPGs and give you some reasons why. With me today, I'm very excited to talk to this guest. She is a game designer, a writer, a producer, and a GM, and a bunch of other stuff. And we have lots and lots to talk about. So yeah, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Hi, yes. My name is Candy. I go by Candy Janine on most of the socials. And yeah, I have been playing games forever, TTRPGs for about 20 years, but just getting into the writing game for TTRPGs about a little over a year ago, and just been having tons of fun doing writing for companies and stuff. It's been a hell of a year.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, we'll get into all of that stuff, but where I always like to start is, like, how did you get into nerd stuff in general?
So when I was a kid, I, just me and my cousins would, you know, be playing video games, and I was always an avid reader. And so that kind of started it off. And then I went to, my horizons were broadened. I went to, I guess private school. I was, one of, like, four African-American kids in the school. I was like 70 kids. It was a small school. So, but even more so, I got into, at that point, like, anime and, like, more gaming stuff, like outside of video games. But I didn't actually start playing TTRPGs until I was my first year of college. One of the guys that lived across the hall was like, "Hey, you want to play this game and you get to make a character?" And I'm like, "I get to make a character? Yeah, sure. It's like a video game. Let's go."
That's awesome. Where did you go to college?
My first college was Marygrove College in Detroit, Michigan, which is originally where I'm from.
Nice. What was it like being a nerd in Detroit?
I had a lot of fun, like I said, with between my cousins and then, like, you know, like the kids that I knew at school. I was into some of everything. I've always just been, like I said, someone who loves to read and create and things like that. And so I had a ball. The only time that I kind of had maybe an issue was going to sometimes, like, comic book stores. And most of the, pretty much all the comic book stores were out in the suburbs in Detroit at that time. And so there weren't a lot of other, you know, like, black kids or, you know, going to these stores. And so you get these, like, looks or, like, this, you know, this sort of aggression from people there. Most of the actual people that were selling were fine. Like, they were cool. But, like, the other people that were, like, hanging out there and playing games and stuff, weren't always the best.
That's tough. Did you, like, in those early days going to a comic book store and stuff like that, like, did you think about representation? Like, obviously you have this like presence of, like, being in a room where you're a little bit unwanted, but, like, you're often had to interface with a lot of media that wasn't made for us or by us.
Definitely felt that. Like I said, going to, like, a pretty much all, like, mostly white school, you know, during, like, a good chunk of schooling, like, that is when I really started to notice. Because before then, I was in private school, and so it was mostly black at that point. And so, like, going to the white school and, like, really starting to see, like, okay, this is interesting. Like, you know, there's only, like, four of us here. Two of us in our grade, the other ones were, like, small kids because it was, like, a K-8 school. And so then started, like, getting into, like, the media as well. I also started noticing that stuff as well. And so that's when I started like really like looking for like some comics and things that were, you know, for us. So, you know, like Black Panther and things like that of that time. Of course, then a lot of those comics were not written by us. They're definitely a lot better now. But even then, like, you know, like at that time, I really didn't know that, you know. But look, looking back now, it's like, okay, most definitely not written by us.
I know. It's an interesting thing, I think, that we go through where it's like, we just get excited by like whatever, like the barest bones of representation that we can get, because we're just like, that's, we need something. But the, you know, that also kind of creates a situation with white creators where it's like, we are consuming it and we're happy that it's there, even if it's not enough, but it's like, it feels like it's like, sometimes we just like created this pass for them to be like, oh, cool. Well, I've done it now. Like I've achieved wokeness and I've, you know, and it's like, no, that's, we do need more work. This does need to be better. I mean, we're seeing this now with the, what's that game? Forspoken. Is that the name of the game that's coming out?
Yeah.
That was created by a white dev team who then said just some heinous stuff in their like press release, you know? So it's just like, cool, thanks. But yeah, please be better. So yeah. So when you went to, when you were in college and you got introduced to that first game, what do you remember, like the character you played?
Actually I do. So this was the, we were playing D&D at the time. The guy actually didn't have the books on him. Like, I guess, I don't know if he left them at home, cause we were in the dorm. And so I don't know if he left them at home or if they were somebody else's, and he just, and so we kind of like, we're going off the cuff. Like I remember like he was like helping us with character creation and all these things, but like we didn't have books at that time. And so, but the character that I made, I, you know, always got to get like super deep, like even with my first character. And so I'm like, ooh, I want to be an elf. And so I was like, I'm going to be this elf. And they're going to be sort of like an outcast, but they're going to, they want to help people. Like ultimately they just want to help people.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, like I need a good name for them. And so I ended up like looking through like some Latin and came up with this name that meant healer outside of humankind. And so the name turned out to be Kyloic Mortal, which I actually have it tattooed.
That's dope. Yeah.
On my arm. And so, and I'm like, cause at that point I'm like, okay, this is like a part of me, right? Yeah, like I'm making sort of this part of me, not always fitting in, but I always want to help people. And so, yeah, they had like these color mood changing eyes they had a panther as a pet.
what edition was this?
You know what? Because we didn't have the books, I couldn't even tell you.
That's interesting. So like, did you guys ever level up at all then?
We did. Like this guy had a memory like, I don't know, an elephant, because like this was to have like really great memories, right? And so like thinking back on it now, I can totally tell like this was D&D. A lot of the rules, like a lot of the things that we were like sort of doing, like like generally was definitely D&D. As far as like the very specifics, I don't really remember, so that's why I really can't even tell you what like if it was a specific edition. But at that point, no idea.
I'm just curious, because I'm like, if this is 3.5, like there's so many feats that you have, like, you know, and all the branching stuff, and like,
and you know what? I think he was just sort of kind of making that part up as he went.
Yeah,
because I feel like, because I've looked at 3.5, and I don't like, I like, it was some similar stuff, but it wasn't like exact, right?
Yeah.
And so I think he was, you know, he was kind of like, you're like, okay, I, you know, I like this better. And so we're just going to do it like this. So it was kind of similar, but not like, I think he was making up like stuff for us to level up into.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, yeah. We had fun. You made it. I mean,
that's, yeah, that's game design, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible. Yeah. So how long did y'all play that campaign?
We played it for about a year. And then the next semester, the next school year, he went to a different school. So, yeah.
How long did it take you to come back to tabletop after that?
I had played a little bit, by that time, let's see, I had moved, down to Texas. It took a while, actually. I had played like a couple of other like kind of smaller games, mm-hmm. in between there. I was really into board games, really into Magic, the Gathering,
yeah.
In that downtime. And then about, what year is it? 23, about 8 years ago, jumped back into it. Yeah. Just like some home games where I was like all of a sudden like the GM, like it was first yeah. time that I was like actually like running the game.
Yeah, that's cool. What system merges was the first time you DM'd?
It was D&D 5e.
5e, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice, yeah. So like in terms of that experience, because I think it's so mm-hmm. fun, like especially if you really love TTRPGs, for me, like this happened. It was like, I loved it. And then I was like, okay, like I have so many ideas. I cannot wait for somebody else to run the game. And I can't wait. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just yeah. going to have to do this now because I need to get something out, you know, this creative outlet. Was yeah. that similar for you?
Yeah, like it started because I had started watching Critical Role and I'm like, oh, I remember this. Mm. I really want to like get back into playing. And so, yeah. and like, because I moved down to Texas, like I didn't have like any family there, but like at that point I had been there long enough that my friends were basically my family. And so yeah. some of them had played before in the past. They're like, hell yeah, let's go. And then some of the people that hadn't played, like, yeah, it looks interesting. You know, let's sure. We'll try it out.
Yeah.
That first game was with 13 people. and no. lasted for hours yeah. upon hours. yeah. But then we kind of whittled the group down after that. Like some people just kind of really wanted to try it yeah. and things like that. And so we finally ended up with a group of about seven, with like one or two people sort of rotating out depending on like time.
Yeah.
So much more manageable. But yeah, like I'm, you know, always been really creative. And so like, and reading stories and writing, just in general, I was like, yeah, I want to like create like my own like campaigns and things. So once we finished, what was it? The starter kit, the Fendeliver
uh-huh.
Starter kit. I ended up like starting to like homebrew at that point, like creating yeah. my own adventures and things like that and running the groups through that.
Nice. Was that like yeah. your first sort of foray into like writing and that creative process?
Not really, actually. I've been writing for a while. I've always written poetry, mm-hmm. And kind of short stories and things like that. I had sort of come up with like some games for work, actually, for yeah. like training purposes.
Yeah.
And so they weren't like narrative or anything like that, but it was just like mechanical wise, like these yeah. games that we can use to learn the things that we needed to do for work. And so, and that's what really it was like, oh, I kind of really like this. Let me, you know, let's do a little bit more. Yeah. And so that's where the homebrew kind of started to come in.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like those ties, like I said, like I always wanted to do, like fiction writing, like writing a novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this has been such a cool way to like tie that in to another mm-hmm. thing that I love. So, So, yeah, I mean, and then you're continuing to play these games and time goes on. Was Dicey Amazons, was that like your first foray into actual play stuff?
the family group that I was playing with was sort of a mix of ages, teenagers up to about 30s, girls and guys type thing. And I'm yeah. like, and I had been watching some other shows. There wasn't a lot of shows mm-hmm. like actual plays out then, but I've been watching like other shows and I'm like, okay, this is, you know, I would really like to see more people of color.
Yeah.
And I would like to see more games, you know, like female, like just all, you know, females, right?
Yeah.
And so, there was something sort of in the back of my mind. And then at that point I had gotten into the slam poetry, you know, little community in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And started just meeting a bunch of people and met a few people at a competition type thing. And I don't remember how we got on the conversation, but I was telling them like, yeah, I play D&D and, you know, blah, blah. And so there was one person's like, oh, yeah, I played that before. It was really cool. You know, we should play sometime. You know,
yeah.
We really hadn't made any plans. But there was another one that was like, oh, I've been really wanting to play that. Like, I've been wanting to play it since like the 80s, but my dad, you know, super religious, you know, the panic of it being, you know, the devil's game and all that thing. And so, and at that point I'm like, okay, maybe I should get something together.
Yeah.
just a little, like, you know, mini series, like mini campaign or something for some people who really hadn't had a chance to play and wanted to play.
Yeah.
And so I did some homebrew, some homebrew stuff, and we got a group together and started playing, and it kind of continued. And so we were playing at our house, and I was living with one of the Dicey Amazons, my best friend at the time. And so everybody would come over and we would play. And my best friend's husband, he'd be like hosting, like we were playing, but he would like get us snacks and, you know, just kind of be listening to us. Right. and so he'd be like cracking up. We're having so much fun and laughing, and he'd be cracking up. And one day he's like, you know what? You guys should really think about like streaming this. I think a lot of people would enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I had been thinking about it, but I hadn't mentioned it to anybody.
Yeah.
And so I kind of laughed it off at that point, but that's when I started like thinking about it. And then I brought it to the group and was like, hey, you know, this is a thing. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
And everybody was like, yeah, sure. You know, I'm down. I'm like, all right. Yeah. So we started planning. It took us about 6 months to kind of get everything together. We ended up building a studio.
Incredible.
in a room.
Yeah.
And because at that point it was pre-pandemic. It was about 8 months before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
When our first episode started. And so we were all like coming together to meet and play games, and it was rough. Like the first, oh man, I was streaming off of a laptop, a 7-year-old laptop.
Yeah.
With multiple cameras and multiple mics, and those first episodes definitely rough, but we kind of caught our stride, and then the pandemic hit. So we started playing from, you know, everybody's from their home at that point, which actually sort of made it a bit easier.
Yeah,
but
less of a load on the one system.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's really cool though. Like, I think that idea of committing to making it into this thing, like you're going to build a studio and all that stuff. Like, I think there's a lot of good energy there that can end up like helping to create the show. I'm curious though, like you were already running a campaign for these people. So when you started the show, did you start a new campaign?
Yeah, we did. I created a whole new homebrew story at that time. Because just wanted something like fresh and new. I decided to just create a whole new world where the first city was a very punny joke. But it was fun.
Nice. Yeah. So like, I'm curious about that. Like how did that play out in game? The diversity being a punny joke.
It was great because the Amazons caught on quick. And it just, it continued on. So unfortunately it was nut jokes.
Oh, gotcha.
Because the city was called Chesterfield, and so the city was known for chestnut trees. Like, that was a major export and just manufacturing of chestnuts. Mm-hmm. And so like, some of the names of some of the places were like Laid to Roast was like the cemetery or yeah. And
nice.
I think Honey and Nuts was like the brothel. Like we just, but yeah, it went over really well. Like the group was just cracking me up and just like, I don't know. Yeah. It was the best.
That's funny. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, we go into the pandemic and the show still continues on.
Yeah.
I think like when, I'm curious, like when was your, what was the inspiration like to take the next step? Right. Cause I imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, the next step for you was like, okay, now I want to start doing game design stuff.
Yeah. Through the Dice Amazons and just like meeting people, like other streamers mm-hmm. and just more people in the TTRPG industry, I had gotten, I had joined Hutopia. And just a nice group that just loves to help people like get started in the TTRPG industry and streaming and writing and things. And so year before last, they started a game jam called the BIPOC Vamp Jam. Mm-hmm. They started the BIPOC Vamp Jam. And so I had seen it like in their Discord and I'm like, oh, this seems interesting. And then it was actually, I had actually quit my job, very stressful job. Yeah. And so I was in between jobs and like resting up. Like it took me forever to like just get back to normal after the stressful job.
Yeah.
And so I was like at home just kind of doing things and kind of figuring stuff out, a lot of Dicey Amazon stuff. And the last day of the game jam, mm-hmm. I was bored and I'm just like, I'm kind of tired of doing the stuff that I've been doing. Oh, I was also like teaching myself software development. So
yeah, nice.
So I was like, I need a break. I'm just bored today. And it was the last day and I was in the Discord just kind of looking and I'm like, you know what? Interesting to, you know, to create a game. And So I think there was like, 13 hours left before like everything was supposed to be submitted, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, vampires. Well, you know, I've been writing this comic forever, like creating this world for this comic forever. And there were vampires in it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, well, that gives me a theme already, but like, what am I going to base this game off of? Right.
Yeah.
and so I'm like, okay, well, there's this place in the comic called the Aegis Entertainment Complex and it's owned by a vampire. A lot of vampires work there and you know what, let's make it a game, where like you're actually competing against each other. Cause most TTRPGs, you're not really competing against each other.
Yeah.
You're usually working together against something, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so at this point, it's like, okay, you're new vampires and you are trying to impress the head vampire to get to the main stage at this entertainment complex by sabotaging each other, doing temporary alliances and things like that.
Nice.
And so I wrote this game. I completely did the itch page and wrote the game and released it within like seven hours. Like I was just in the zone, just straight like bam, 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 bam. Had like somebody read it, like it was like, sound like fun, like would you, it's like, oh yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
Okay. It posted it all in the last day of this game jam.
Incredible. Yeah.
And you know, everybody liked it. So I was like, oh, okay, all right, let's see. And so I ended up getting another idea to do like a hack of Kids on Bikes that weekend. Mm-hmm. And so did that and just released that as well. And then I was like, well, I'm not really doing anything. I mean, I'm learning software development, but you know, let me do something. And so like a couple of weeks later, I ended up applying, for this writing job, which I'm still on. Like it's a long-term project and ended up getting it. And I was just like, how?
That's so cool though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like that's, like, one, it's a good testament, I think, for people like myself, because that's something I really want to do is write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For game companies. And I'm not very outgoing. Mm-hmm. Two, I don't pay attention a lot to like social media or even Discord sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think like it's important to like know that, you know, you do also have to like sometimes put yourself out there, right? or make your own thing, which, mm-hmm. you know, is great as well. But mm-hmm. it, you know, sometimes it's like, this is a good thing there's a chance that a lot of people are going to play this and love this, but there's also like, here's an established company who can help you like with some infrastructure, get under your feet. Yeah. I'm curious, like to the extent that you can talk about it, like what was that like to like start a job like that writing for somebody?
So this was actually not an established like TTRPG company. Yeah. So the game is Confluence RPG.
Yeah.
And the project owner, Seven, had been writing this world since they were like 14.
Oh, damn.
They've released some stuff, some additions for their game. But they realized that there was a lot of, since they've been writing it since it was 14.
Yeah.
There was some stuff in it that that needed to be fixed.
Yeah.
And so they did a tarot campaign. It's actually the largest tarot campaign on Kickstarter, made like over $1 million.
Dang.
And was like, hey, I've got some seed money to start this project. You know, I really want to do it right this time.
Yeah.
And so started this team and started hiring people. And so, like I said, not an established TTRPG company at all, which I think was actually like the best start for me. Right.
Yeah.
Because I was so new, like I'm not sure that having an established one that early would have been the best for me. And so being able to kind of be free, a little bit freer, I think, mm-hmm. with this project and maybe not knowing a lot going in, was the best for me and just for like my creativity and things like that. Because we do, like, even though it's an established world, we have a lot of like leeway to say, no, like, we don't want that. Let's add this stuff in.
Yeah.
And that's the other part, is because it's an established world, was also a really good, starting writing project for me as well.
Yeah.
In the industry. So,
yeah.
Because you're not having to come up with absolutely everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I think like, yeah, it, I can see what you mean about that, like helping and kind of having like that, sort of like less strict, less like almost corporate type of a deal to, mm-hmm. to work off of. And since then, are you doing, or have you done other projects as well?
So I have, done, they're not released yet, so I can't like go into details, but I've done some work with Hit Point Press. Mm-hmm. And so like by the time I got like the first job with them, like I was definitely more confident and like, okay, hey, like this, I can definitely do this.
Yeah.
By that time I have done some projects with the Indie Games Co-op. And so we released, we did a Kickstarter for a book called Incredible Items, where I wrote like almost a dozen magical items. Working on another project with them called Apocalypse. So I get to write out an apocalypse scenario.
Yeah.
So that one's not completely done yet. But it was actually really great. Through that the Indie Games Co-op, that was the first time that I actually had a physical book with my name in it.
Yeah.
That's, and so that was like, it felt good. It felt good.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But It's kind of interesting because it's led into some other things. Like, I've actually been a professional playtester for like a RPG board game.
Yeah.
Which is just really interesting. And so I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Getting into some different things.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. I think that's like the other big thing, the having your name on something physical, like, mm-hmm. is such a cool. My book will be coming out this month in February for Zine Month, and I'm gonna die when I see it. it's so wild to think about. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's like, you know, there's so much stuff like that in the space now, that we have these opportunities to do. You know, do you still, like, how can I phrase this? Having been given the opportunities, and earning the opportunities to do this stuff, like, do you feel like, creating your own game is something that you want to do, like your own, like, big mm-hmm. game, big print, something like that?
Yeah. So, actually I had started working on, so like I have my very first game. I have released that hack of Kids on Bikes, and I released like another, like, sort of smaller game on Itch, but mm-hmm. I've been working on a game for about a year, called Briarbound. And this one's like,
hey everyone, I just wanted to take a second to talk about Zencastr. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that I've used Zencastr since the beginning. One of the things that I've always tried to do is get the best sound that I could for the podcast and for my skill. And as my skill has improved, I have used different editing software and different editing techniques. But the one thing that stayed consistent is that I've always used Zencastr to record. And the reason being is because I get a high quality recording out of it, and it stays high quality when I transfer that over to my editing software. It's super easy to now just move straight into podcasting with Zencastr. So you can log into your browser, start it up, and get that high quality podcast recording. You can record studio quality sound, up to 4K video with your guests, and you can feel great knowing that Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have recordings of the highest quality, even if your connection is unstable. I've had a couple of episodes stop because of connection issues, and it's always very close to where we were, and we're able to just pick back up where we left off and then download those MP3s easily and get it where we need to go. So yeah, sounding great is important when you're podcasting. So make sure you take advantage of this. Go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SECRETNERD, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey nerds, so if you've heard me talk for more than 5 minutes, you know that I am a father. And not only do I have one kid, but I have three kids, and that sometimes can be a lot. So how do I deal with that? I drink a lot of caffeine. I wake up and I drink a couple cups of coffee. I also have other caffeinated beverages throughout the day, which is fine. I endorse this, but it also makes me pretty dehydrated. So one of the ways that I like to hydrate is with water, but drinking water alone for me personally is just a little bit difficult. I need a little bit of flavor in there. And so my flavor of choice tends to be Liquid IV. Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. So with just one stick, you can hydrate real life 2 times faster than water alone. Plus, get the essential vitamins and 3 times the electrolytes as the leading sports drinks. And it comes in a bunch of great flavors. My personal favorites are strawberry and strawberry lemonade. It's also got a very convenient package that makes it easy to use, carry around with you. It contains 5 essential vitamins, B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C. And it's non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. So if you want to be like me or like yourself, but hydrated, definitely look into Liquid IV. Real people, real flavor, real hydrating. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code SECRETNERD at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code SECRETNERD at liquidiv.com. Back to the show.
even more special to me than the other three, because it's a reclamation of the Br'er Rabbit stories. And so I've always liked those stories when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But except for the slavery, like the themes of slavery, yeah. Like I knew these stories were from folktales from Africa, but then they were taken, and pretty much everybody that's written anything about it since the 1800s has been white. And I'm like, and so I took that. I'm like, I want to reclaim these themes and take out those themes of slavery and put them into a game. And so I've been working on this game for about a year. I've talked to a couple of publishers. So hopefully, we can get it published, but definitely still want to work on my own projects. I've got a lot of ideas for games that I want to do. Actually, the first game that I made, I actually want to make that into like a small part of a big TTRPG as well, like a big IP.
I've like one of the things that I found as I was making my game was like when I originally started to like conceive of the idea, I had this like, all right, it's going to be like a 200 page book, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And then I started making it, and the more I was making, I was like, well, I don't like want to just draw things out just for the sake of drawing them out. Like, I want it to make sense in terms of its length. And so the length that it is now, I think that there are extra stuff that I could add that like would be most beneficial for the GM, who's like, you know, here's like some more world information, things like ideas to help create different scenarios, stuff like that. But it's still, you know, it's pretty small. And so like, was that something you came up against of like the idea of like having an idea of how much you wanted this to be and actually like parsing it down to what the game actually needs?
So I don't think I really think of games in terms of size necessarily.
Yeah.
Like for Briar Bounds, like at the most it'll be 20,000 words probably. Like it's I'm trying to make this sort of a tight game, right? It's not this game that has like all of these different, you know, worlds and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so for that one, I really wasn't thinking about size, more so that I just wanted everything. Like I wanted it to be sort of like a straightforward game and just easy to jump into, right? Yeah. For the one that's probably going to be larger, that one, because it's based off of the world for my comic book and just sort of the different ideas that I have for it, I just feel like it's going to be larger. And so that's why I say like that one's probably going to be, you know, like a bigger game.
Yeah.
So definitely, you know, getting into the hundreds of pages on that, it'll be a big one.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
For your comic book, like is it something that's still in like a concept era, or like are you like how much of that is done or
so I have a problem with doing too many projects at once.
I'm guilty of that as well.
So I started world building this comic book a long time ago, and I've done some stuff with it, nothing that's like published, but like you know, things like that, but other sort of like artistic stuff with it. And then I ended up writing the first issue and then creating like that first arc. So I don't have like the full arc written out, but I have the first issue written out.
Okay.
And so I'm at this point where like I'm still learning about like writing comics and just writing like long form stuff in general.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of taking my time with it. And so I know that there's some things that's going to change in it, but one of the things that I am working on is doing like the City 23 prompt or the the original
Dungeon 23.
Yeah, the Dungeon 23. So I decided to do City 23, but I decided to use the world of the comic book to do more of the world building this year.
Gotcha. Yeah,
and yeah. So a lot of this year is me basically creating the world Bible for this.
Yeah.
For this world. And then I'll be sort of kind of going back and forth between the comic book. And then also, because again, too many projects, I also have ideas for a novel series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
and so that's why I decided that I needed to do more world building, is because there's so many things that hinges on this world that I want to have as much built out beforehand. So that I think that'll help me a lot. That'll help me with the writing, and you know, not having to like think of like all of the stuff as I'm going with the writing, but yeah, having a lot of it already, like the world already built.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's cool. So are you gonna do the artwork as well, or are you gonna have to get somebody for that?
Oh no, I'll get somebody for that. Once upon a time I wanted to do the artwork for it, and I'm a decent artist,
yeah,
but nowhere near like what I would want for my comic. So
yeah, that's just I feel that. I think it's like, as I was making my game, so much of like what we do, especially if it's a new thing, right, like it's mm-hmm. it's got to be a do-it-yourself type of deal, and figure out exactly how you can go about getting that done. So like I did all the interior artwork for my book, and I did nice. a cover that was just a passable, like it wasn't just a blank sheet of paper. Yeah. As soon as I got like a little bit of funding, like enough funding from digital sales on my game, I was like, okay, I went to my friend and I was like, Zakiya, can you do me a cover? And they did an incredible cover. And so, yeah, like I think it's good to know your limitations and figure it out. Especially like, I mean, in TTRPGs, I feel like art is definitely important, but it's like you can still get pretty far without having artwork in your book at all. Or you know. But yeah, I think it's just like, a comic book is, that's the medium. Like
yeah, there came a point where I'm like, okay, there, I mean, I just want to do too many things. Me mm-hmm. and me wanting to get better at drawing, it was just going to take too much time and from other things. And yeah, I could definitely get somebody better and probably get this out quicker than me learning to draw. So
yeah. Do you like, is your current day job conducive to you doing all of these extra projects?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like I have a pretty good work-life balance. And so like, I don't do like a lot of stuff after work. I, you know, pretty much, you know, 8 to 5.
Chill.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not a stressful job, which is great. And so like, I still have that energy to be able to do stuff like after work.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I think that's so important, because it's tough. Like I know it's easy, especially like when you're knee deep in a project, to like just go into like this mega crunch time and just wear yourself out trying to get stuff done. So yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, that's so cool though. Like it's so much fun to see these ideas like come together and branch into different things, and you know, to have this idea for this comic and a novel and a game all attached to the same thing. So no, I really do love that. Yeah. Do you still find time as well to like continue playing games? Not just
Yeah. So we'll be jumping back in with the Dicey Amazons. We're moving to a pre-recorded format for our TTRPG games.
Love it.
Yeah. That'll help a lot. And because I'm the eternal GM for Dicey Amazons, yeah. I usually have, you know, a lot of prep to do for that, as well as the producer. But I think we're gonna get a producer for this run as well. So
yeah,
just trying to do a few, like get a few things delegated out to kind of free up my time to do all the things that I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, like, how long do you think it took for you to sort of learn that about doing this project, like Dicey Amazons, like to learn that it shouldn't all just follow one person, and these are some of the other areas in which you could use help?
I don't know. Have I learned that? No, it took a while because, like I said, like the studio ended up being like a sort of a free room at the place where I was living. Yeah. And so it was there. And then I was the one running all of the tech and then, you know, creating the games. And so yeah. like at the very beginning, like even before we started like the Dicey Amazons, like I would do like so much prep for these games. And so even learning like, hey, I don't have to like do like all of this prep. I can let the players kind of control the story a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so learning that and then kind of letting it go even a little bit more, you know, as we went helped. But then like once I started like writing and designing TTRPGs and like all the projects that I want to do, I'm like, okay, like something's got to give at yeah. this point, right? Because I want to do everything and I know I can't. This year is supposed to be the year that I realize that no actually exists. I have gone against it. It is what day 27. I have not used it once when I probably could have, but it was for a very small project. It was two
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
So I was like, I didn't feel too bad. I'm like, okay, well, you know, we'll give yourself an excuse for this one. Yeah, right. Yeah. but yeah, this year is like, okay, I need to make sure, you know, that I have the time to do the things that I want to do. Because, you know, it's fun. It, you know, I want to make sure that I'm happy doing the things that I'm doing. And so,
yeah.
Yeah, this is when I'm like, okay, let's get a producer. Let's get somebody, get an editor. Let's get our shows pre-recorded. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a huge difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like even just in, you know, the quality, because it's what's funny is like 2020, the pandemic, it changed, I think, in a lot of ways the way that we consume media, and that mm-hmm. it became completely acceptable for people to just like slap together a podcast and throw it out there, or have the stream just be live when everybody's got like different mic qualities, and you know what I mean? And because it's just like, we're just like, oh, we need people and we need media, and we're just like ready to consume whatever.
Yeah.
And but I think what it also did was like, okay, now time's going and people realized, oh, okay, well, you know, this is a place that I can upgrade and it can actually sound better and move forward. So it's, I find it interesting as a person who really loves like really crisp audio. I love pre-recorded stuff.
And it
is interesting. Like I listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of talk shows, and some of them are, they say they have an editor and I'm just like, I hope you're not paying them. It's no shade to anybody specifically.
Yeah, but it's just yeah. like
this idea, like it really doesn't take a lot to do certain simple things. Right. And, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's just like when you realize that that moment, and you can go, okay, well, now I have like the resources to be able to say like this. These are things that we could do to do this, and one, it's going to make it easier for everybody because now these things are spread out, and two, mm-hmm. it's going to sound better. Which is, you know, another stress taken off the thing. I think that's definitely a win. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the way to go for us. Like you said, like you get different quality sounds and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were like slowly like piecing that together. Like mm-hmm. the Dicey Amazons, there's six total of us, right?
Yeah.
And so there were some people that, you know, were working off of kind of like old, like especially once we were at our own place, like mm-hmm. everybody was at their own places. That's when we started to realize everything. And so yeah. I like the people who didn't have cameras, like because we had multiple cameras for ours. Mm-hmm. I started giving them like the webcams that we had. We bought a couple of PCs for people. They were used, but they were better than what they had, better quality mics. And so it just started to kind of slowly but surely get people up to, just kind of bring up the quality, right?
Yeah.
But with, I think, pre-recorded, we have, it's just, it should be even better, right? Because now we'll have somebody in there editing and kind of working on, you know, any sound quality issues and things like that. And we're pretty excited to be able to polish.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like one of the great things about like having a producer or an editor is like having this person who can be the audience's eyes and ear.
Yeah.
And go, oh yeah, like, cool. I understand like you're in this game, you're having fun, and that's cool. But like also when somebody's watching this, like half of your face is out of the frame and you're not even talking into your mic some of the time. You know, so things like that, like I think has been really cool. Like we've with a bunch of people from that are also in Utopia, like we're doing a Star Wars podcast AP, playing Pathfinder 2E. And that was like, we have so many conversations about like, all right, well, what's going to be the setup? Who's going to do what? And now that I'm in my too many podcast arc right now, I am like, I'll do it if you don't make me edit, or if you're fine with me doing the bare minimum editing. Our voices will sound amazing, but I'm not taking any extra noises out. Because I can do that in like 15 minutes. So yeah, it's fun, but I think it's like, it's an interesting space, interesting time to be part of like the TTRPG space when we have all of these like different ways that entertainment media is becoming a part of it. And, you know, now with like the boom of everybody being like, fuck WotC, we're just gonna make our own games. you know, it's helped a lot. I'm curious, like, because I don't know, for the game company that you're writing for, was that like World and stuff, was that all designed for 5e?
No. They're when they released their previous editions, they had built mechanics on their own. But decided for this project that they wanted all new mechanics. So we have a whole mechanics team that is working on a brand new system specifically for how we want this game to play.
Yeah. That's cool. And you do part of the mechanics as well?
No, I don't actually. I'm just the settings writer, and then I do some socials stuff.
Do you feel like the setting stuff is what you prefer to write over mechanics?
I think for like larger projects that I'm hired onto, I think yes. Mm-hmm. I would like to actually get a little bit more into the mechanics though. So if there was something where I can kind of do both,
that would
be interesting. But like if I had a choice over for a project, like I had to choose one, absolutely settings. Like I love creating stories and worlds and things like that. And I think it may just because I don't have a lot of experience creating mechanics, especially out of 5e. So like the games that I did, like my own personal games, like I created the mechanics for it. Especially Briarbound. Like I wanted the mechanics for that game to do something very specific. So I read probably a couple of hundred games and like card games, board games, TTRPGs to kind of figure out what mechanic I wanted. And I finally found something that was perfect for that game and kind of turned it into a little bit more of what I needed. And so I was like, you know, great. But yeah, as I get more experience, I think it's fun working on mechanics, but like I'm a storyteller. Like I really just want to tell, like, you know, create worlds and stories and things like that.
It is fun. I think like I feel like I used to think the same, and I probably still do if it really, really came down to it. But I think that there's something fun about mechanics and the stories that they tell. In that now when I have friends who are like, oh yeah, I'm working on this game and I'm like trying to figure out this mechanic for it, I'm like, let me in. I need to, I can tell you all about that. And I'm like, you know, and I'm still new to this too, but I think it's just like, it triggered something in my brain of like, okay, you have been unleashed now. And, your desire to problem solve is now manifest into game design. But it really is cool because it's like having that, like a good marriage of those two, of the, this is the world and these are the things that, that the world should evoke. And then this is the game. And how do the mechanics get you to feel the things that the game designer wanted you to feel? Yeah. And that is a lot of fun. And I think like there's so many more games now that are coming out that are focused on, creating a sense of feeling and,
right.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see how that works. Would you consider the Briarwood game like, a narrative game?
Oh, absolutely. As far as the mechanics, like I tried to steer it to be more narrative because okay. The game is more narrative. It's GM-less, and so there's not like one person running the game.
Yeah.
And I think that also helps it to be more narrative because you're absolutely a collaborative group at that point. There's nobody, like, you don't have to do any prep for this game. I just want it to be sit down, read the rules, go. Like, that's it. And because of the theme of the game in which you are sort of trying to make your way home mm-hmm. by overcoming obstacles from your friends and from big bads.
Yeah.
Like it just lent itself to be like a really narrative game. Like the playtests that I've run have all been very different stories from all the groups, and it's been amazing.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. It's, I know you said you read hundreds of games, but like, you know, in finding those mechanics that fit that, like, do you, do you mind sharing, like, what were like the big, inspirations or like the mechanics that like really stuck out to you that like helped you kind of lead that?
So the part that I was having trouble with was it's called the Battle of Wits. And so it is the obstacle with the rabbit character and the big bad. Mm. And because the theme of the actual stories are using your wits to get out of situations, there's no actual like combat.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of the stuff that I had played before, like if it was conflict, it was combat.
Yeah.
And so I went looking for games where they had conflict, but it was sort of like I needed something narrative, but also something where you are using your wits to get through it. And in the game, the wits are these like tokens that you earn during earlier parts of the game. And so you're spending these wits to get through it. And I was just looking and I'm like, I really can't find anything that does this for me or like even close. And then I got this lead. Like I think I found the right search terms and started getting into, there was like a mechanic in an old game called Mouse Guard.
Okay.
And then, oh God, what was the other one? And that led me to Burning Wheel, I think.
I think
game called, old, that. Old game called Burning Wheel. Like it was like older games that I was finding and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And so that ultimately led me to a game called, oh God, Spy Something. I can't think of it, what it is at the moment. It's Spy Something. And so they have this mechanic where it's a card mechanic. And so there are these specific cards that have specific actions on it. Mm-hmm. And so you spend something in the game to play these cards, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting because, you know, with the wit if they're gaining these wit tokens, they can spend the wit tokens to play these cards. And so the cards are very specific actions. They also have prompts, like narrative prompts to help you like play through that action.
Yeah. Mm.
And then something that's different from the actual game, like the one that I found, the spy game, was like a point system. And so depending on the cards that you play, each one has different point values. And some of them depend on what the other, like the other person plays. And so your points can go up or down depending on what you play next. And so that's how the Battle of Wits shakes out. At the end of that Battle of Wits, whoever has the highest points wins that round. And so then the story continues on from whoever won, and then, you know, you go to the next scene.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah, it's so cool, like, how many different new components have been, like, added into games. You know, like the Jenga towers, cards, you know, all this you different stuff that people are using.
the third game that I released on itch.io is called Picking Up the Pieces, and I don't know why, but I really wanted to use pickup sticks, the kids game pickup sticks for a mechanic. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. So I came up with this game called Picking Up the Pieces, and it is using pickup sticks to do everything.
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, it's fun. Like, it's, you know, it's a good way to incorporate it. And I think, like, it really does a great job of, I recently had Danny on, Brutal Dan, and we talked about like that idea of, like, you can kind of incorporate these two different worlds. And, you know, for people who are just like, yeah, I really love, like, having, like, board game night. And it's like, cool. Well, what if during board game night, when we were playing Monopoly and you landed on somebody else's property, you had to fight them in a 1v1 with your Pathfinder character. And so I made that, you know, and so, like, it's, you know, there are things like that, like, that I think, God, that the Jenga Tower one that I watched, I cannot remember the name of the game, and I literally heard the name of it earlier this week.
Oh, is it Fiasco?
No.
No, it's a different one. Okay.
It's like a horror game.
This is a Fiasco. I have it. I have PDF of it. I can't think of the name of it either, but I know which one you're talking about.
Anyway, but yes. And so it's like, oh, like, you want to do this thing to get out of a situation where you have to pull 8 Jenga pieces. And it's like, that's a lot of pieces. I mean, it's like fun because it's like, it's still conflict resolution, but it's also using a form of randomization. Which I think, like, really helps to just kind of add to that sense of tension in a game.
Yeah.
Which I love tension in games. So
I'm really big on sort of you're going to use, like, a miniature term, but, like, kit bashing games together.
Yeah.
Because when I mentioned like the games that I did for my old job for, like, training purposes, I was kit bashing, like, games together. Like, I actually did one that was sort of TTRPG. Where you had to answer questions, but it was like Battleship and like using the map of like a TTRPG. And so, right. So each team had like their own sides that they couldn't see, and they set up like their little miniature army. Yeah. And so you, like, if you answered a question right, you got to choose and see if you took out that unit of, and so, like, stuff like that, like, putting things together is just, it's my bread and butter. I did that with, like, we did a one shot for this game, this TTRPG that we were playing, and I surprised the group with a whole ass escape room.
Nice.
They had no idea what was going on. I was like, hey, like, you have this room that's open right now. Can I use it for something? And can you go away while I set it up? Can you not be home? And they were like, okay. And so I got in like an hour early before we were supposed to start our game. I set up a whole ass, like, puzzle and everything into this room, had all these props and all sorts of things going on. Yeah. And so I'm like, don't open this door. Like, everybody was getting there, like, don't open this door, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so we sit down to play, and then they end up in a wizard's tower, and I'm like, oh, and like this field comes down behind you and you're stuck at this wizard's tower. Now I need everybody to get up and follow me. And then we go into this room that I had built, like, the wizard's tower in, and they had to do like a room escape scenario.
Nice. That's so cool.
To get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Heck yeah. I mean, I think we definitely just need to incorporate more stuff like that, because it's just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for sure, I've had plenty of fun sitting at a table and rolling dice. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's nice to mix it up sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes getting up from the table, like you're still playing, right? Yeah. You're still like having fun with friends, but, and it's still part of the story, which is even better, right?
Yeah absolutely. For sure. Well, yeah, incredible, Candy. Like, this has been so much fun. I've been wanting to interview you for a long time. I just have, you know, finally got down to the list.
Yeah,
so
no worries.
Here we are. But yeah, thank you for coming on and chatting with me and sharing your story. If you would like, where can people find you?
As I said earlier, you can find me at Candy Jeanine, J-E-A-N-N-E. Usually there's an underscore in the middle, but sometimes there isn't. But either way, sorry, it's K-A-N-D-I underscore or not, J-E-A-N-N-E. Yeah. On all the socials.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you again. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you would like to reach out to us, check out the many options on the Anchor app or anchor.fm on your browser. You can also reach us at secretnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show. And if you'd like, leave a review to help us grow this thing.